Good evening, I'm Christian Esguera, and welcome to this episode of After the Fact, where we get to see things more clearly, where we get a better sense of the truth. Let's begin by dissecting the news. The Philippine Supreme Court has declared parts of the controversial anti-terrorism law as unconstitutional in what some of the petitioners described as a small victory. But was this really the case, since the rest of the contested provisions were deemed constitutional, including the one that extended the period of warrantless arrest and detention to up to 24 days? Or the power of the Anti-Terrorism Council, a body composed of cabinet officials, to designate a person or a group as terrorists? And with that, the government could freeze their assets for the time being. Still, some of the petitioners saw a measure of victory when the Supreme Court ruled that a portion of the definition of terrorism was, quote, overboard and violative of freedom of expression. Be part of our discussion. Send us your questions and comments on our YouTube live chat or tweet us using the hashtag ANCAfterTheFact. Joining us tonight is Senator Aquilino Coco Pimentel III. Good evening, sir, and thank you for joining us on the program.
Good evening. Thank you, Christian, for inviting me.
Okay, let's start with this much-awaited decision by the Supreme Court. A lot of people were waiting for this. 37 petitions assailing the provisions, if not the entirety of the Anti-Terrorism Council. With this decision, basically removing that questionable provision in the definition of terrorism, what do you think would be the impact of this decision by the Supreme Court on the law itself?
I think given the news report, Christian, because we have not read the decision plus the concurring and other decisions, I think if those are the two provisions struck down as unconstitutional, only two parts of the law, therefore basically the Supreme Court upheld the constitutionality of the law. Because yung isa, the first one, from the reports, it says that it's only the qualifier, a phrase which describes or defines the activism or the freedom of expression involved. The court says that do not qualify the freedom of expression or the freedom of assembly actions involved. So that's one. So, and then the second one is the automatic respect given to the designation of the United Nations Security Council on a terrorist organization. Okay, from the reports I have read, no reasoning has been given, but siguro it has something to do with the Philippines being a sovereign state, sovereign nation. So we have to decide on our own, and we do not delegate that to an outside entity. So basically, kung yun lang yung dalawa, this upholds the anti-terror law, of which the more controversial would be the warrantless arrest or detention for 10 plus 14, maximum total of 24, which goes against, there is a constitutional provision where, if I remember correctly, may maximum period dun of 3 days. Mm-hmm. So that's mentioned in the Constitution. So all of a sudden, a law mentions a crime where you can be held without a warrant for the maximum of 24 days.
Okay. But by the way, I was looking at the record of the Senate regarding the vote on the anti-terrorism law, and you were not there, right? So what happened?
Because measures on third reading are taken up at the start of a session. I think I was late for that particular session, so I was not able to vote. But had I been there, I would have been inclined to vote no, not in favor of the measure.
Okay. Which particular portions of the anti-terrorism law, which you found objectionable?
Yun na yun, yung isa.
Yung warrantless arrest and detention, the 14 days, extendable by 10 days.
The period, yun. Kasi if you look at the Constitution, I think I found a provision there, yun na, I think it's just 3 days mentioned in the Constitution. So how can you go beyond the days for one of the most for one of the most serious crimes na yon, yung 3 days na yon. And then The definition of terrorism itself, because we had the Human Security Act, this old law had elements, so which follows the concept of the revised penal code. If you have a crime, you have elements, so you know if the crime is present or not. That should have been the better approach.
Oh, because just to clarify for our viewers, no? So the contentious provision that was deemed unconstitutional by the Supreme Court, actually it's not the entire provision, a portion of a qualifier.
Yeah.
I said while this particular portion seemed welcome for people, nakalagay dito, that terrorism as defined in this section shall not include advocacy, protest, dissent, stoppage of work, industrial or mass action, and other similar exercises of civil and political rights. Mm-hmm. But then came the qualifier, which are not intended to cause death or serious physical harm to a person, to endanger a person's life, or to create a serious risk to public safety. I think kinatatakutan ng marami, no? So, sabi ng Supreme Court, that's unconstitutional. But even then, correct, is there... go ahead, sir.
Pwede na kasi period na doon, period. Because tama naman yun, activism, protests, legitimate protests, legitimate assemblies, cannot be terrorism. Period na. Yun na po yun. So that is what the Supreme Court may have done in this case.
But with what remains in the anti-terrorism law, do you think there's still much to be afraid of or to be concerned about?
The power of the administrative agencies precisely isa nga doon, when you are labeled by the administrative agency as a terror group, then you already can feel consequences. The organization can already feel consequences, like yung freezing of the assets, etc. Tapos, even the crimes kasi, terrorism, planning terrorism, taking steps towards terrorism,
inciting to commit terrorism,
inciting, proposing terrorism, they're now lumped together with and the punishment is serious for all of them.
Do you also agree with the concern that the Anti-Terrorism Council itself, composed of unelected officials, basically cabinet people, acquiring too much power, one of which is to designate a person or a group as a terrorist?
That's correct. So that's one of the issues. But if held constitutional by the Supreme Court, wala na tayong magagawa dyan except to move for reconsideration and come up with better arguments. Siguro ganito kasi, Christian, kasi we are debating the law on more on the theoretical level. Pero siguro once it is applied and someone is really aggrieved by the application of the law, then we have this injured person can now question again the constitutionality of the law itself or a provision of the law applied against him, and he can also argue as applied. Ganun kasi yan eh. You can argue that the provision of law is theoretically unconstitutional, and you can also argue that the provision of law as applied to you, as being applied to you, is also unconstitutional. I mean to say it's being executed in an unconstitutional manner.
Misapplication. Misapplication of the provision.
Not really a misapplication, but you know, it's too broad.
Okay.
You had no sufficient notice of what is prohibited by the provision. So you can argue that a certain law is being implemented unconstitutionally, but you must be the injured party.
Okay. Let's talk about the potential harm here. No, we're approaching the official election period by January next year. One of the concerns raised while this law is being crafted was that this could be used by those in power to go after the opponents, political opponents. For instance, to designate someone, a candidate, as a terrorist. And then in the meantime, the assets might be frozen. And then he could be the subject of surveillance. Are these real concerns that you think would have the potential to happen?
More of theoretical. concerns given the language of the law. But I do not think that they will, the administrative agencies will do that, you know, kasi mapapahiya din po sila. Sabi mo nga, it's election time, you do not want to be embarrassed also during election period.
But what if, let's say, the Anti-Terrorism Council, since it already thinks or presumes that members of certain leftist organizations are basically terrorist organizations, what if, let's say, candidates for party list groups are designated? Would that be an actual harm that could happen? Kumbaga, to remove them from the electoral process by virtue of this law?
Possibly to be attempted, but there will be remedies under the law for those to be affected. They can probably go to court, ask for the TRO or a preliminary reversal of the order so that they can continue with the candidacy. So theoretically speaking, it could be done, but I suggest that they do not do it. Kasi at any rate, lahat naman ng mga, all of those party list groups participating in the party list election have been vetted or allowed by the COMELEC to participate. So ano na po yan? Mga cleared organizations na po yan.
Okay. Now, let's go to the other issue. The libel suit filed by Energy Secretary Alfonso Pusi against 17 journalists or respondents. You were quoted as saying that you're willing to offer legal advice to those who have been the subject, basically the respondents. Has anyone actually approached you to seek legal advice?
No, not yet. No one yet, Christian, but parang a media personality or practitioner has posed to me a question. Yun na nga, not really a question, but a situation or a circumstance, you know, na the effect because of the cases filed by Secretary Cusi against, I do not know, 17 pala yan, 17 news organizations, there is necessarily an effect on me, on media practitioners. So for itong isang, for example, ito, sabi ng isa, paano daw niya aanguluhan yung statement which criticizes Secretary Cusi, baka daw siya biglang kasuhan din. So mga ganun. So there is really an effect. And if this is such an effect, ang tawag yata dito is chilling effect. Kasi chilling, ibig sabihin nun, nagsa-second thoughts ka, you are chilled into inaction. We have to help our media practitioners for the cause of press freedom. Kasi this chilling effect might have a freezing effect. Yan ang ayaw natin. Then all of a sudden, the subject matter cannot be discussed anymore in the public arena because of the threat of cases.
Okay. Now, before we go to the other issues dun sa libel suit filed by Secretary Cusi, I just want to make this clear because some people might be thinking that you're offering legal advice because the one who sued the journalists was basically a political enemy of yours, Energy Secretary Alfonso Cusi. Are you doing this because he's not your friend or he's your enemy?
Kumpare ko po si Secretary Cusi, actually, Christian. Okay. So, hindi, I do not treat him as an enemy. We just have an issue within the party. But then, look at the what happened. Ito nga, it's 17 media organizations are charged for libel for reporting on the filing of criminal cases, anti-graft cases filed before the ombudsman. So medyo yun nga, katulad sinabi ko kanina, the automatic chilling effect might end up to be a freezing effect, di ba? So what is the end result? The subject matter of the criminal complaints, which is the Malampaya issue, would now be taken out of the public arena. It cannot be discussed anymore in public because of threat of cases.
Do you think that precisely was the goal here?
it may have been the goal, kaya nga, so it must be resisted. Because malampaya po yan. It provides, wala lang yung notes ko with me, Christian, but maybe the 30% of the energy needs of Luzon,
yeah.
The royalties for the government, plus the investment. May pipeline dyan. Eh. I don't know, nakalimutan ko na yung length ng pipeline, but the government has already invested in that pipeline. So this is really a subject matter of public interest. And no one should be allowed to take steps so that it cannot be discussed publicly because there is a threat of facing criminal charges.
Okay, so what would you advise as we speak now those journalists who were sued for libel by Secretary Cusi and businessman Dennis Uy?
Do not worry, fight the case. And argue using well-established principles and arguments there's also freedom of the press. Matagal na, my staff also gave me a very old case upholding the freedom of the press.
Do you see a measure of strength in the complaint filed in the first place? The fact that he decided to sue these journalists, these media organizations, simply for reporting about that particular issue.
Well, yun, if that's the only ground, then I go back to my word of encouragement to those sued. Do not worry. You can find a lot of cases upholding what you have done to be part of press freedom, freedom of speech, and the right of the public to be involved in matters of public concern. Ang dami, marami po tayong dahilan na to absolve those who have been charged for libel.
Okay. The other day, there was this argument raised by the lawyer of the petitioner, of the complainant, sabi ni Attorney Rui Rondain. One question he had was, bakit yung articles na lumabas, the stories that were uploaded online, were supposedly based on a press conference and a press release, not on the actual complaint that had already been filed before the Office of the Ombudsman. Although later on, there was a clarification by the lawyer of the complainants, yung si Attorney Rico Domingo, saying na the Ombudsman's office in Iloilo had actually received the formal complaint of graft, October 18, and then a press conference and the statements were released the following day. And even then, does it even matter if the basis of this story was not, assuming for purposes of discussion, was not the actual case filed and received before the ombudsman?
Yeah, the stories were based on the press conference where an announcement was made that either a complaint has been filed or a complaint will be filed. So if it's a fair and true report of that incident, which involves a matter of public interest, even investigated by the Senate and discussed extensively during the budget hearing for the Department of Energy. So I see nothing wrong with the report. But this is, pero ito nga Christian, this is a free country. Anyone can decide to charge the reporter, but you know, do not worry about the case because you will win that case. And then siguro ano na lang, charge the other party for the expenses.
Okay, but finally Senator Coco, we know that one of the elements of libel is malice, no? But how does the court treat this element of malice if the person concerned or the subject of the report is a public official, not a private individual? Is malice presumed or not?
In my opinion, in this particular case, involving the media organizations kasi ito eh, for a report, for a news report, therefore malice is not to be presumed. So the complainant must prove that the news reporters were motivated by a malicious intent just to destroy the subject matter of the report. Yun po yun. So in making the report, pero merong ano eh, I mean, it's an established fact that, you know, a press con was held announcing that a complaint for graft has been filed or will be filed. Ako nga, in my opinion, even if it's an announcement that it will be filed and the complaint was ultimately filed, then it happened. So ano na po, I'm back to my first statement, do not worry about the case.
Okay, Senator Aquilino Coco Pimentel III, thank you very much for joining us tonight on the program.
Thank you, Christian, for the time. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. After the fact, we'll be right back. Welcome back to After the Fact. A Filipino journalist shot dead in Calbayog City in Samar. Jesus Malabanan was killed in his home by unidentified gunmen on Wednesday. The killers are still at large. Malabanan was a stringer for the Manila Standard Today, Reuters, and Bandera. He was previously based in Pampanga, where he also served as a stringer for ABS-CBN News. The Presidential Task Force on Media Security described the crime as cowardly. For more on this, we're now joined by Attorney Perry Solis, Chief of Staff at the Presidential Task Force on Media Security, or PITIFOMS. Good evening, sir, and thank you for joining us on the program.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for the invitation.
Okay. First, let's talk about this this bad news about the killing of Jess Malabanan, a highly respected journalist. Huh? So what do we know so far based on the available data? What happened there?
Yes, sir. Actually, we are very saddened by these kinds of cases. You know, the Presidential Task Force on Media Security, where I am part, is, of course, working very hard to protect media workers like, of course, you and most and all of the journalists out there in the country. And in the case of Mr. Jess Malabanan, of course, we know that he is actually based in Pampanga, in Angeles City. And he has a farm in Calbayog where he goes there from time to time to, of course, take care of his farm. Actually, as per this data's report, of course, this is still under ongoing criminal investigation by the Philippine National Police of the specifically the Calbayog Police Station. And they are, of course, conducting hot pursuit operations for possible apprehension of the killer, sir.
Okay, wala pa, hindi pa natin kilala kung sino yung pamatay, no? Pero
yes,
how about the motive? Nakausap niya na ba yung family and ano ba yung sinabi nila? Possible
yes, sir. Actually, Yusek Edco is in close coordination. By the way, the executive director of PITIFOMS is actually Undersecretary Joel C. Edco. And PITIFOMS is actually also chaired by the Department of Justice Secretary Medardo Guevara and PCCO Secretary Martin Amdenar. And we are all in close coordination with the Philippine National Police, who has just recently informed us that they have already formed the SITG, the Special Investigation Task Group, to look into the killing of Mr. Malabanan. Actually, we were just also tasked by Secretary Guevara to oversee the investigation of Mr. Malabanan, sir. But since this is just happened last night, the police are still investigating this crime, sir.
Nakakatanggap po ba siya ng death threats based on the account of the family, or this completely took them by surprise?
Actually, si Malabanan is not as per people from the Standard, and Yusek Edco has also worked for the Standard before. He's not really a hard-hitting journalist per se, no? And we were told by his friends and colleagues that he planned to stay in Calbayog for good, of course, maybe to retire there and to take care of his farm there. So previously, he asked for help from the PITIFOMS in 2017, 2018 regarding certain unknown individuals that were apparently stalking his house. And immediately we asked the Philippine National Police in Angeles City to look into the problem, and he was actually given security. In fact, Mr. Malabanan, after being provided the security measures by the PITIFOMS and the PNP, conveyed his gratitude to Petty Foms.
So basically the threat ceased after that?
As far as we know, we don't see, as of yet, sir, we don't see any connection with the threats that he has received before and the killing that happened.
Yung threats na nakuha nila noong 2017 tsaka 2018, did it have anything to do with his role in the Reuters report on the drug killings under President Duterte?
Yes.
Because according, may kinalaman ba ito, yung threats na yan before?
Well, again, this is an ongoing criminal investigation, and we are looking into all possible angles. Please take note, as per our standard operating procedure, we presume all killings of media personalities, journalists, as work-related until the evidence tells us otherwise. So it's our presumption that this killing is media, is work-related. But okay. Of course, yes, sir.
My question was, when he went to you in 2017, 2018, when he went to the Petty Foms to seek help, no? Yung threats na natatanggap niya noon, did he say, or were you able to establish that those threats were in connection with his reporting, with his work as a stringer for Reuters at that time, yung contribution niya?
Yes, of course. We all know that he contributed to the reportings of Reuters that eventually won Pulitzer Prize in the United States. But there was actually the PNP who investigated the case found no connection with the writings that he was, with the contributions he made to Reuters. So after that, after thanking us for the security measures that he provided, then there was nothing else that he relayed to us regarding any threat to his life.
Okay, based on the figures that we got, there have been, he is the 22nd journalist to be killed under the current administration and 87th since 1992. It's all about your batting average as far as the task force is concerned. In terms of resolving cases and seeing to it that the killers or assailants are prosecuted.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Please note that still, as per our records and in the PT forms, we are actually a better stats compared to the previous administrations. And as per our record, there were around 30 plus killings during the administration of PRRD, including non-work-related, that is work and non-work-related. The PT Foms investigate all cases involving media workers, whether that is work-related or not work-related. Unlike in the previous administrations, where we counted around 40 cases of media killing. So if we are going to compare, of course, statistically, we can say that there are far less killings of journalists during the time of President Duterte.
Pero ilan din yun na-solve? Doon sa mga pinatay?
Well, as of now, please take note that once a crime is committed, whether you are an ordinary citizen or a journalist, the police and other law enforcement agencies will immediately look into the killing or to the crime and investigate that to the fullest. And as per records, most of the cases, most of the killings of journalists are actually have been investigated by the Philippine National Police and by the National Prosecution Service. And that most of them are actually already filed in court.
Okay. Attorney Perry Solis, thank you for joining us tonight on the program, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir. Thank you for your time.
We're going to take a quick break. After the fact, we'll be right back. Welcome back to After the Fact. I'm Christian Esguera. We're now joined by Attorney Howard Calleja, a counsel to the petitioners against the anti-terrorism law. Good evening, sir, and thank you for joining us on the program.
Again, good evening, Christian. Good evening to your televiewers. Magandang gabi po sa inyong lahat.
Okay, what do you think of the Supreme Court decision? Much awaited. But only two provisions that were rendered unconstitutional and the rest were deemed constitutional.
Well, first and foremost, no, we have to look na Christian sa akin, the victory on the case first and foremost ay dun sa procedure, no? Kasi they were saying dapat i-dismiss yung kaso dahil procedurally we cannot still file the case kasi wala naman justiciable issue or we don't have standing, etc., etc. But I guess not having read the entire decision, but since they already made a decision or a pronouncement as to some parts of the law as unconstitutional, to me it would appear that procedurally they have allowed the merits of the case, meaning yung standing namin or yung aming position, whether or not it was right to file a case to begin with procedurally, and number one, it is a victory for us.
The facial challenge, you're talking about the facial challenge.
Yan yung facial challenge na pinag-uusapan natin. No? Sabi ko nga yung procedure, yung standing natin. Second, yung doon naman tayo sa merits o sa substance, doon naman sa provisions of the law, because yung facial challenge is on the procedural of bringing the case. Doon naman tayo sa substance. Of course, I would be happier, put it that way, if they have made unconstitutional the whole of itong Section 4, kasi dinagay lang nila yung last part, no? I mean, yung meron A, B, C, D, E, then paragraphs, and then dun sa last paragraph lang, dun sa provider doon, sa ilalim noon, yun ang tinanggal, because we look at it as a double negative, yung proviso na yun. But then again, kumbaga, what I will say is, I'll take whatever wins or gains that we would have at this point in time. Hindi pa naman tapos ang laban. Kasama na dyan yung Section 25 na we won also, part of it, we won also. So we have gains here and I will take it as a gain. And dun sa mga hindi namin na nakuha, for example, yung Section 29, yung imprisonment of more than 24 days without filing of a case, which we highly feel na talagang unconstitutional, I think hopefully during the motion for recon, we can maybe give or argue it again, and hopefully the court can listen to us and be enlightened again.
But you would have to present new arguments.
Well, new arguments or maybe depende kasi on how they decided. Maybe we can say na they appreciated it in a way that maybe we need a revisit on how they re-appreciated it. Maybe not really arguments, but that's why, as I said, mahirap magsabi ngayon at this point in time, Christian, because I haven't seen anything yet in the resolution, whether it is the majority or should there be any dissenting comment. So maganda sana mabasa natin lahat kasi that's the only time that we can really say how we can argue it in one manner or the other.
Okay, sige. Para, again, binasa ko na ito kanina at the start of the program, pero para mas maliwanag, I'm going to ask about the importance of the Supreme Court ruling declaring this particular portion of Section 4 in definition of terrorism as unconstitutional. Kanina sinabi ni Attorney Calleja, you deem this as double negative, no? Because of the proviso. So, dito sa Section 4, and paliwanag ko muna sa readers natin para, and then I'll ask you for the implications of this, no? So sa Section 4 dinedefine yung terrorism. Okay, there are elements pinabanggit on what constitutes terrorism, and then meron ng clarification na terrorism as defined in this section shall not include advocacy, protest, dissent, stoppage of work, etc., etc. Sounds good, right? Kasi hindi kasama maganda yung activism.
Beautiful.
Kaso yes, may sumunod pang qualifier.
Yan yung proviso na sinasabi natin.
Which are not intended to cause death or serious physical harm to a person, etc., etc. Ibig sabihin, while safe yung mga nagra-rally for instance, pero pumalo dun sa proviso, yari pa rin under the definition of terrorism.
Yeah.
Now, what because, is the importance of this decision?
Because
that this is declared constitutional.
If you look at it, if you look at it, Christian, the definition, yung A, B, C, D, etc., says what they think is a act of terrorism or terrorism, except if it goes to advocacy, etc., yung nakalagay doon. Then meron na naman, except if it intends to cause harm. So yun yung sinasabi namin na double negative, except to the except, di ba? So ang mangyari niyan, maganda yan, because For example, we can say na we are voicing out, let's say, freedom of expression, freedom of speech, or going out into a peaceful assembly. They cannot say na it is intended to cause harm. Walang ganon. Because we are doing a legitimate cause or legitimate advocacy, then we can, it is an exception to the definition as stated above of Section 4. That is what we are saying. That's why importanteng natanggal yung double negative na yon, o yung exception to the exception na provision na yon.
Pero para naman, let's say, merong mga agitators, so let's say, ano to, hypothetical question. Let's say may sitting government, tapos may nag-organize sa isang mass action under the guise of a protest action, kunwari. And then, yeah, intention pa na talaga manggulo, mag-cause ng chaos, no? So this can no longer be cited. And what would be available? What would be available? Well, an available remedy for the government?
What,
there are
what,
other provisions what, in the revised penal code.
Yeah, that's true. There are other provisions that they can be held liable to. But what we were arguing before is that, for example, nag-rally ka, and it is a peaceful rally without anything happening. And then the police can just say, well, although peaceful, there is an intent to cause harm. There is an intent to cause public damage, injury, etc. Kahit wala pang nangyayari. Oh, so I think that ang maganda doon now, tanggal na yon. Yung sinasabi natin na may nanggulo, eh may nanggulo na. So ibig sabihin meron ng act doon na panggugulo o injury or physical damage. Then again, then the question there is, they might be held liable under this law or any other law. But the point there is, Christian, which is very important, is yung intent to cause harm e nawala. Or and intent to have bodily damage, etc. Yun ang nawala, which is very good.
At kung sakaling nandun yung proviso na yun, mahirap yata patunayin. Paano pa papatunayin kung may intention ng isang tao?
That's why we were arguing very strongly on that provision, saying the provisor that it does not apply to advocacy, that does apply to peaceful rallies or peaceful assemblies, was taken out because of the proviso. Now, without the proviso, which was stricken out as unconstitutional, it is clear that, for example, we have a peaceful assembly, they cannot say that it is intended for harm or damage, etc. Because as you already said, Christian, paano mo nung patutunayan yung intent to cause harm, intent to injure, for example? And that is all in the mind. That's why we're saying also in the definition of Section 4, if you go higher to that, because what we're reading is the last paragraph, andun din eh, intent to cause harm, intent to have property damage. So, ganun din ang sinasabi namin. Because it is not an actual act, but what they are you punishing is the intent or the mindset of the individual, which to our mind is difficult to guess, di ba? Kasi wala pang actual act or actual crime na nangyayari. E nasa utak pa lang ng tao, huhulihin mo na.
Okay, let's go to the other provisions which were assailed or questioned before the Supreme Court. Again, based on what you know so far, they were deemed constitutional, no? Kaya binanggit yun na yun. Yeah. I think that's Section 29. So yung period for warrantless arrest and detention, 14 days, extendable by another 10 days. Pwede umabot ka ng 24 days in detention, arrested without a warrant. In the meantime, walang kaso pang pina-file sa'yo, no? How dangerous is this?
Sabi rin namin siyang Christian is, 24 days, tapos pakawalan ka, tapos hulihin ka ulit, wala na bang, nobody's stopping them from doing the same thing to you how many times over. So, ang sabi namin dyan is very clear naman under our constitution that the warrant is only given by a judge. Here, the notice or the permission to hold somebody in custody for more than 3 days, which in total can be 24 days, comes from the Anti-Terrorism Council, which is not a judicial body. So we are saying that in itself is violative of our rights, our constitutional rights. Kaya we are very much opposing this lengthy putting you in jail. At saka yung ating constitution also, in times of habeas corpus, you are only allowed 3 days to be in jail before being charged. Eh dito, we are on a normal situation. Kasi ang suspension of writ is during only abnormal situations. So how come in a normal situation, you can be incarcerated with no crime at all for more than or thereabouts of 24 days?
So how would you consider now this two provisions that are considered unconstitutional if the other questionable provisions basically remain?
Well,
how would you look now at the anti-terrorism law?
Yeah. Well, I would say na it has lessened in a bit, but it is still very draconian and very dangerous. Kung in its text prior to the Supreme Court decision, it is 100% draconian. I would say it's now 98% draconian or dangerous, no? Nabawasan natin ng konti. We, as I said, we have our gains and we will take that as a gain, no? Hindi naman na even if I think stocks are held against us, meaning medyo mahirap yung laban, it is an uphill battle that we fought this anti-terrorism bill, anti-terrorism law. I think this striking down these two provisions proved, as I said, that indeed there are questionable provisions in this law. And I feel that hopefully in the motion for reconsideration upon restudy or revisit of this decision, maybe they may see or may find more questionable provisions that hopefully they can strike down later on.
Earlier you mentioned the Anti-Terrorism Council, a very powerful body under this law, composed of unelected officials, basically cabinet officials, having the power to designate groups or individuals as terrorists. So as things stand, that power remains since that provision was not declared unconstitutional, right?
Precisely, Christian. That's why we're saying parang itong with that council, with this law, it appears that it is martial law without declaring martial law because you can do the warrantless arrest, which was very evident during martial law time. No, so sa atin, nandiyan na naman yung takot na yan. Nandiyan na naman yung red tagging. They can just designate you. Although part of it was a win in Section 25 that yung mga supernatural bodies hindi automatic to be red tagged, no? If they pronounce us, let's say, by international bodies or supernatural bodies. But then again, sabi ko nga, hindi pa naman totally na natanggal itong Section 25 of designation. But I'm happy that we have chopped bits and pieces of this bill, of this law, I should say, and we can proceed from there. It is not the end of the fight. Tuloy-tuloy pa ang laban at tuloy-tuloy po ang pagtaguyod ng ating karapatang pantao, ng ating mga civil liberty.
Okay. Now again, the Anti-Terrorism Council has the power to designate a person or group as a terrorist upon finding a probable cause, right? I've heard this argument before. While this
actually,
law
was... actually, Christian, hindi klaro yung probable cause. They can just designate. So
hindi ba maliwanag that there has to be finding of probable cause?
Wala doon. That would be on the judicial body, but the Anti-Terrorism Council on its own, nakalagay dyan, can designate an individual or a group. So whether or not they use probable cause or whatever measure they use, then again, my question is, what even if they have a standard, they are not a judicial body. Nobody controls them except the executive. So then again, if you look at it, part of the members of this ATC or Anti-Terrorism Council is the Department of Justice, which is the same body that designated and the same body later on that will investigate. So parang malabo ata yun. How can you go against the body that designated and the body that investigated? So parang malabo ata yun. That's why we're saying whether or not there is a standard, the mere fact that the Anti-Terrorism Council is given this big authority to designate and even to notify or to put hold anybody liable for 24 days without any case is, we think, very dangerous and very draconian in character.
Now, this power to designate coming from a body composed of cabinet officials, do you think this has the potential to be used against, let's say, opponents of the any sitting regime, any sitting administration? Yeah. But in this case, actually, in the coming elections, mag-designate ka ng kalaban and then pwede siyang mag-freeze ang assets niya, di ba?
Actually, totoo yan. Kasi once you are designated, the Anti-Money Laundering Council can automatically freeze your asset. That is a consequence of that designation. So that is very dangerous. And the only time you would know that you are designated is when your assets are already frozen. So then again, for example, kami po sa opposition o yung mga nasa tinatawag na na hindi kanais-nais o medyo lumalaban sa gobyerno, they can just designate us as terrorist, communist, or red-leaning, etc. Actually, myself, I've been surprised that there are even a number of write-ups that have been that have accused me of being a red-leaning communist or a terrorist to that effect. No? So if that can happen to me, if they can do that and falsely designate me as such, how more the Juan de la Cruz or any other ordinary Filipino? Kasi nga, walang kalaban-laban. So, yun ang pinaglalaban natin. Na sana, matingnan naman, hopefully, on motion for recon, the Supreme Court can have a second look over this issue.
I think there's one safeguard regarding that is if someone, for example, you are designated, you have 15 days to appeal that designation. Doesn't that provide some measure of safety or comfort well, after you've been designated?
Ganito yan, Christian. That's the question. No, that's the basic identifier. After I have been designated, for example. But as I said kanina, I would only know that I have been designated when my assets are frozen. So then again, ano ka na kaagad? Your hands are tied already. How can you now even fight anything if your assets are already frozen? So meron ka na kaagad penalty bago ka pa mag-appeal of your designation. So that's the question there, Christian. It's really very, as I said, very one-sided and very much draconian in character.
Okay. Attorney Howard Calleja, thank you very much for joining us tonight on the program.
Thank you, Christian, and thank you again to everybody.
So that's it for tonight. This has been your host, Christian Esguerra. You can watch this episode again on iWantTFC or listen to our podcast on Spotify. Now, for recaps and other exclusive content, subscribe to the ANC YouTube channel and catch up with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. See you again tomorrow after the fact.